Welcome to Conversations with David Lewis. Today, the talk. Today, continuing my conversation with John Lewis about the talk, the conversation that black parents have with their kids about how to interact with the police. It's a conversation unique in many ways to the African-American community, and one that I never had with my father, and I haven't had with my son. John Lewis is a partner at the largest black-owned law firm in Atlanta. That's Lawrence and Bundy, and formerly chief litigation officer and chief diversity officer at Coca-Cola. So, can you do the talk? Can you demonstrate it? Like when you were talking to your nephew?
Sure. I would start out by saying, again, 16 is usually the moment. I think people start a bit earlier, but 16, because it is a point at which most states will give your kid a driver's license. And I would say, one of the things that you need to understand as part of good driving and as part of safety is you need to know the rules of the road in interacting with the police. Start off by saying that 99%+ of the police that you will encounter are good and decent people. And really sort of take seriously their responsibility to serve the public good. But police are human beings too. And they come with their own biases and their own preconceptions and own misunderstandings and candidly their own bad days. You got to take that into account in the same way that you got to drive defensively when you're out on the highway. It's not enough to be a good driver yourself. You have to account for the people around you in the other lanes. And with respect to the police, you got to account for the fact that you may have a police officer who, for whatever reason, is going to approach you in an aggressive and inappropriate way that really bears no relation to anything you did. It may be your tail light or whatever else. But it's not right, but it may be your responsibility to de-escalate something. Police are supposed to, but you may have to. You de-escalate by making effusive use of the word sir. I personally am a 51-year-old man, David, but I have called 22-year-old cops sir. And I do that for a very specific purpose. It's to sort of lay the groundwork that I recognize their authority. A lot of these unfortunate interactions are born out of the fact, and the people who become apologists, particularly for these egregious cases, say if the person had only submitted, if they had only sort of acquiesced and sort of acknowledged the sort of power of the police officer on the scene, it might have gone differently. It's a small price to pay. It's a small slice of your ego in that moment. But make use of sir. Keep your hands where you can see them. Be fairly conspicuous about that. Hands on the steering wheel at 10 and 2 right where you drive, but only your fingers extended. Ask for permission to move. The officer says, license and registration. I would respond, well, officer, my license is in my wallet. And at your instruction, I'd like to reach in my pocket and get it. Are you ready for me to get my wallet? Then I would get the wallet. Well, officer, my registration's in my glove box. And at your, instruction, I'll reach over and do that. I'll use one hand. I'll move slowly. My glove box is full of stuff, and a bunch of stuff may fall out as I open it. But I want you to know that that's where it is, and I'm responding to your instruction that I get it. I did that once to a point that I think it unnerved a cop. He said, sir, 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 is there something in the glove box going to hurt me? Or, sir, 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 I'm not going to hurt you. And I said, I understand that, but I want us to be at all moments during this interaction in exactly the same mind about what the what is. I'm just a guy trying to get home, and you're a guy trying to get home. And I'm not casting any judgments on what's in your heart or mind, but you've asked me to do this, And if you think about it, in the Minnesota case, I think reacting out of nervousness when the cop told the guy to go in his pocket, he launched into it. And all of a sudden, he shot in the arm, and we all know kind of tragically how that ended. So be very deliberate in your movements. Err on the side of asking for additional permission to move. If a cop asks you to get out, there are a couple of these instances where I think people did themselves no great favors by being argumentative. A cop says, get out of the car, get out of the car. If the cop says, hands where I can see them, hands where you can see them. There is nothing that is ever going to be gained by attempting, again, to litigate whatever it is you believe has happened to you improperly there on the sidewalk. If anything, you're just going to antagonize. The cop will always win in the interaction on the street. Get out of there as quickly and as quietly and as non-confrontationally as you can. And then come home, we can talk about it, nephew. But if you try to resolve that on the street, what we know is that you're more likely, not only are you less likely to de-escalate, but you're more likely to antagonize or give the police officer a reason to believe that he or she may not be safe and you may not be compliant. So follow those rules and always sort of, you know, be aware of the condition of your car. We've seen instances, and maybe the population at large can ride around with busted taillights and such, but understand that the condition of your car can put your physical safety at risk, because anything that subjects you to an opportunity for a police officer to stop you is something that ought to be of concern to you. Be mindful of what you have on. In the old days when I was here in the 80s at Morehouse, it was the age of the drug courier profile. Four black guys riding down I-95 or up I-95 was probable cause to stop and search. You don't see very many black guys in jogging suits anymore for that reason, I think, because, it's a real simple sort of, attire adjustment to make not to look like the guy that the police thinks is a drug courier. So, get the kids want to wear dreads and locks and all these other hairstyles. But understand that the cop is sizing you up as he approaches your car, and he's trying to make some judgments, some based on good data, some based on bad data, some based on stereotypes, some based on sort of what they have been taught. And all that sort of factors into the calculus of sort of how that interaction will go.
I am talking about The Talk with John Lewis, who's a partner at Lawrence & Bundy, the largest black-owned law firm in Atlanta, and former head of litigation and chief diversity officer at Coca-Cola. So John, not just in your role at Coke as chief diversity officer, but you've been through many kind of diversity training situations. You and I went through one together, Leadership Atlanta. You've been through many of those situations. When you tell the non-black members in those situations about The Talk, what are the reactions? What are some of the reactions that you remember that surprised you?
Well, there is some degree of surprise and some degree of perhaps consternation. It usually is a moment of sadness for my friends who are not African American, and they said, well, it's unfortunate that there's this sort of extra burden that's placed to sort of, to be concerned about the safety. All parents are concerned about the safety of their kids, but there's this sort of extra layer of concern that is not born out of anything other than history and preconception and atmospheric. It's not based on anything you did. So people become a bit surprised by that. But I think that the roots of The Talk are not terribly dissimilar to some of the diversity discussions that go on at places like my former company. They are rooted in a lot of instances, in my opinion and my experience, in the unconscious biases that we all harbor and that we all sort of carry around with us as bad data. In a company, that's unconscious bias that manifests in a way that causes us to believe that women are less suited for certain kinds of roles, or that certain ethnic groups are more suited for certain kinds of roles.
Yeah, go team the Jews.
Yeah, exactly. Or, I had a colleague once ask me, why does everybody think us Asians are all in IT? So unconscious bias is real, but what unconscious bias looks like in that sort of traffic stop is here's a police officer who believes he knows what he knows about the group of people who look like the motorists, and the motorist who believes he knows all he needs to know about the group of people like the guy who has pulled him over. And that becomes, without some measure, that becomes a recipe for a bad outcome if somebody's not there to sort of de-escalate it. So people get a bit surprised about sort of how it goes. I remember in our own diversity training, there was a bit of surprise that was expressed in the room that there was this sort of extra discussion that particularly with young black men, although I will say that, as we've seen with Sandra Bland and some of the other instances, it's not an issue that is particular to black men, which sort of undermines a bit this whole idea that the stereotype is that, you know, that the black guy is a brutish soul who'll be able to overpower the police. That sort of goes out of the window when you talk about these bad interactions with women. So folks are trying to figure out exactly, you know, how much of this sort of lives right below the surface. And the reality is every black man that I know has a story about this. There was one some years ago involving Secretary Colin Powell. During the week we are who we are, but on the weekends we look like everybody else. We've got on jeans and t-shirts and ball caps, and we fit the descriptions of half of the crimes committed in the city that night. Because those descriptions generally say a black guy, 20 to 60 years old, between 5 foot and 7 feet, and a ball cap and jeans.
Who may have had dreadlocks. Yeah.
Who may have had dreadlocks, right. And probably had a goatee, right. Or something. So that's kind of the moment. But I think I was grateful for the moment of Leadership Atlanta. I've been grateful for the moment where we can begin to kind of tear down some of the information barriers so people can kind of begin to understand and empathize with why this has been such a concern over the years for black families and Latino families, probably.
John Lewis, thank you for talking about the talk and for educating and for bringing wisdom to a larger community. I appreciate it. I've appreciated it in the past, and I continue to appreciate it.
And David, I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Thank you.
Got it.